This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Monday the 9th of July. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dean Arcuri. Tonight on the show, we find out about the rebranding of the Victorian AIDS Council. As the new name was announced at VAC's 35th anniversary celebration on the weekend to Thorn Harbour Health. Why was this change needed and what does it represent? We find out with CEO Simon Ruth. Plus, how safe do gay men really make queer spaces for women? We look at this issue from a very different perspective tonight as we talk to drag performer Menora Fox, who's also a cisgendered straight woman, and find out if they really get to let their guard down when in a queer space.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
In the lead up to their 35th anniversary, LGBTI health organisation and Australia's oldest HIV/AIDS organisation, the Victorian AIDS Council, also known as VAC, announced that they were changing their name to Thorn Harbour Health. The new name recognises two visionary community leaders in the organisation's history of advocating for the health and well-being of both people living with HIV and LGBTI communities, Alison Thorn and Keith Harbour. I spoke with Thorn Harbour Health CEO Simon Ruth about the rebranding and looking to the future of the organisation.
For the past 35 years, change has been the one constant in the work of our organisation.
So we started rebranding, started talking about it in 2013. We were previously Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre as we realised the world was changing and that we would be developing a whole range of programs for the broader LGBTI community. It became clear that Gay Men's Health Centre needed to go because that alienated certain parts of our community.
As the HIV epidemic has changed, our organisation has evolved. We are now responding to a broad range of issues that affect the health and well-being of our community as a whole, with issues such as drug and alcohol use, trans health, family violence, lesbian health, homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, and stigma and discrimination faced by people living with HIV.
So in 2014, we moved to VAC. After 4 years of being VAC, it was always thought it would be a first step in a broader rebrand, but it's also become very clear to us that the word AIDS, particularly in our name, is alienating to certain parts of the community. It's not only women and trans people and also young people who don't identify with it, but certainly some older guys living with HIV longer or older people living with HIV longer also don't like the word AIDS being in the name because they find there's a whole range of stigma associated with AIDS, which isn't associated with HIV.
Our work has also moved beyond Victoria with health promotion programs and projects that are national in focus.
Because we now work across two states, we're also in South Australia and we're running some national projects, Victoria's become difficult as well. It just doesn't represent who we are. We conducted a survey at the start of the year. We spoke to 160 people and then had some in-depth interviews with about another 30 key stakeholders about our rebrand and our name, and universally everybody thought it was time to change the name of the Victorian AIDS Council.
Halfway through the fourth and hopefully the last decade of the HIV epidemic, the time has come for our organisation to reflect the changes faced by our community while maintaining the legacy of activism that created us in the beginning.
And so we're moving to Thorn Harbour Health. It's important to us that we have a brand that acknowledges our history, but also sets us up for the future. And Keith Harbour and Alison Thorn are two people who played very significant roles in the formation of our organisation, and are two people who have given their lives for our communities in very different ways. Keith died of AIDS in the early 90s. He established ACT UP. He was an early president of ours. He established buyers clubs in Victoria, bringing in drugs that weren't currently available to ensure that people could live. And Alison has dedicated her activism and her life to the needs of not only helping set up our organisation, and she is the person who called for VAC to be formed at a meeting on the 12th of July 1983, but she's also dedicated her life to the rights of trans people and lesbians and the broader LGBTI communities and working towards greater access to health and welfare and wellbeing for our communities broadly.
Thorn Harbour Health was formed in 1983 as a central part of the Victorian community response to the HIV and AIDS epidemic, and 35 years later continues to lead the response by providing a range of services which include prevention, education, treatment and care of people living with HIV, as well as counselling services. Hundreds of volunteers make up 90% of Thorn Harbour Health's workforce, and as a not-for-profit organisation, a lot of the work they do and what they set out to achieve depends on the dedication and hard work of these volunteers.
VAC and now Thorn Harbour Health have always been formed by the community. We were formed at a public meeting in our very early days. We were entirely volunteer run. Today we still have volunteers outnumbering staff 10 to 1 within the organisation, and then we also have our members across two states and members around the country and also some international members. And we think of ourselves as a community-controlled organisation. We're an organisation driven by our community, who elect our board, who govern us, and we deliver services to our community. So we're also launching our strategic plan tonight at this event, and our strategic plan very firmly puts community back into the running of the organisation and the importance of volunteering within this organisation. So volunteering for our community is not like other communities. Volunteering is your way of finding your community. So for a lot of people, when they come out initially, whether it's at 18 or whether it's at 58, volunteering is that opportunity to engage in the community, meet other people like you. It's not just Thorn Harbour Health who do this, it's also Switchboard and other key organisations who provide that access into community. But it's important to us that volunteering always be a key function of our organisation. So it's not just about, you know, helping alleviate some of the costs in the organisation, but it's also about providing an important social opportunity for the community to come together. And likewise, we support a whole range of other volunteer organisations across the LGBTI community, either through grants or through providing space to them to come and have their meetings in our buildings. As part of the rebrand, we are also launching a large campaign that will go out across Melbourne. I think there's going to be 280 of these posters, and it's about Thorn Harbour Health there for us. And the posters depict they're all our volunteers, so they're people that we work with and people who help contribute to our organisation, depicting the various parts of our community across the broader LGBTI communities. In our new strategic plan, we're talking about sex, sexuality and gender diverse communities, knowing that that document has to survive for 5 years, and in 5 years we won't be talking about LGBTI, it will be a broader group of people. One of the key posters in the campaign is a poster of two boys kissing. For those who know their Victorian queer history well, they'll know that in 1990 VAC attempted to put up another poster of two boys kissing, when you say yes to safe sex, and that was at the height of the AIDS epidemic, back when we had, you know, five young men dying every day of the year of AIDS, and we tried to run a campaign to attract young men to the knowledge that they needed to put on condoms. And at the time, TV Week refused to carry it, the Advertising Standards Bureau refused to allow us to put it up in public. It was essentially just a picture of two boys kissing each other with a safe sex message. The health minister at the time, I think, called it disgusting and threatened our funding. And, you know, and so we're using a picture of two boys kissing in this campaign. It's now 28 years later. Hopefully we will get a very different reaction on this one. If we don't, if there are issues with it, or if it does get vandalised, I think that'll say a lot more about the community that we live in rather than our communities. LGBTI people should feel safe to be affectionate and hold hands and kiss in public, and we hope this poster has an impact on making people realise that Thorn Harbour Health is there for them.
The image from years ago, which Simon Ruth is talking about, is of two very Anglo, very white boys about to kiss. But the new image, and all of the images in the new campaign, capture the diversity of Thorn Harbour Health's volunteers and the diverse community that they support through their services. With over 600 registered volunteers who donate their time and energy to many of the program areas, it's because of their support that Thorn Harbour Health is able to provide many of the programs, activities and services that are valued by their clients, members and all of the community.
We're a very multicultural community. Part of the reason to rebrand is VAC, you know, historically has been seen as an organisation primarily for gay men and partly for gay white men. Over the last 4 years, we have doubled in size and most of that growth has been in LGBTI health. We're now providing a range of domestic violence programs, drug and alcohol programs. We've had a women's drinking campaign. We're running the women's conference this week, which we've got in excess of 400 women coming to Melbourne to talk about lesbian, bisexual and queer women's health and trans women's health. And we hope that this campaign shows the community who we are today. We're not the organisation we were 5 years ago or 35 years ago. It's a very different place today and we hope that this engages people.
And while this isn't the first time that the organisation has evolved with a brand and name change, that doesn't mean it won't take a while for people to get used to Thorn Harbour Health.
Yeah, it's a terribly exciting time. In the consultations that we did about whether we should rebrand, we were told we should have done it 2 years ago, and we probably should have done it 2 years ago. And of course, with a Pride Centre on the horizon, it's very important that, you know, a health service in that Pride Centre is a broader health service for the whole community and not just for parts of our community. At the same time, it's terrifying. I'm sure there will be people who won't like this brand, but in 6 months' time, probably no one will care. It will just be Thorn Harbour Health is the health service that LGBTI people go to. Last time we rebranded, we got rid of the red ribbon as our logo and moved to the red asterisk. We got a lot of complaints about that. This time when we did the consultations, everyone loved the red asterisk. So the red asterisk is the only part of the brand that has stayed. Yes, so it's a very exciting time. It's also a very scary time, but we hope that this brand sets us up for the future as being more than an AIDS council, but providing health and wellbeing services to the whole of the sexuality and gender diverse communities. We're not the AIDS council we once were. We are a much broader health service. We now have Equinox, which is our trans clinic, which has over 700 patients attending it. We have the Women's Health Program that's running health promotion campaigns for women and looking at a range of cancer screening programs and the Women's Health Conference. We're doing work with Intersex Health Rights Australia around helping them promote their needs. We're really open to any part of the sexuality and gender diverse communities who want to come to us and want to work with us, and we're happy to see how we can help them.
In aligning our new brand with leaders like Alison Thorne and Keith Harbour, we're not simply acknowledging the legacy of our past. We're also recognising that the care, health and well-being of the gender and sexually diverse communities will need bravery, commitment, inclusion, imagination and vision. We are now Thorn Harbour Health, and we will continue to work for the dignity and well-being of our communities, now and into the future. Thorn Harbour Health, for the future.
That was Simon Ruth, CEO of Thorn Harbour Health, formerly known as VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
Gay men, have you ever thought about how you really treat women in queer spaces? I mean, really thought about it. Are they the inclusive spaces that we want them to be for all, or is it just inclusive for you? Menorah Fox is a drag performer in Melbourne who surprised me when she told me she was actually a straight cisgendered woman. I'd watched Menorah perform many times and never put a lot of thought into the person behind the drag persona. But when she came to The Informer wanting to share her story, it was one of the things that we thought a lot of gay men needed to hear. While we can all agree that more needs to be done to create a safer and more inclusive environment for everyone, are we really doing our bit to make that happen? Or are we just part of the problem?
I never really liked clubbing before I started drag because I genuinely don't feel safe in those places. I'm a very, like, if I hear a bad situation or a bad story, I can't help but put myself, like, in that situation in my head. So whenever I heard about people being attacked or raped or anything terrible like that, at scenes like that, I just became too scared to do it. And that's sort of when I fell into the queer community, because I found a group of people that really love and accepted me and wanted me to be safe. But there are often times, especially when I am in drag, walking into a bar or a club where mostly cis gay men decide that because I'm there in drag, they have the right to touch me or grab me or grope me. And because I have my guards up already, because that's something that I'm really genuinely terrified of day to day, it's quite hard to deal with, especially when it's in a place where I not only expect but deserve to feel safe.
As gay men, do you think we create a safe space for women in queer spaces?
I feel that we are very much inclusive. It is very much a gay male space, but we're always very inclusive of females.
We could do better. We could do a lot better.
How do you think we could do better?
Well, you have to be proactive a bit. Simple stuff like actually making sure there are women there, which it's very easy to just go, oh, there are no women here, not our problem. But you have to actually reach out a bit.
As gay men, do you think we create a safe space for women in queer spaces?
No, I think generally speaking, when gay men walk into queer spaces, they see it as very inward looking. They think that queer spaces are mostly for them. And it takes like one person to have to actively say, no, queer is all inclusive. There are women here as well, and they should be represented. I think there are definitely people who say that, but I don't think there's enough of them.
So I personally identify as a cis straight woman, but in a weird way, I also identify as a queer person because although that's not my sexuality, it's probably the only community that I've ever found that I feel completely accepted, free and comfortable in. And I don't feel that I'm just an ally because I spend 99%, even 100% of my time with my friends and family within the queer community that I feel like it is my community in a way that it's not sort of appropriating, if that makes sense. I've decided to call myself, instead of a bio queen, a drag queen with pussy power, because it's like I want something that is empowering, and I want something that I can say, no, I'm fully a drag queen, I'm not a subpar, I'm not in a niche group, I am a drag queen, but I have something that makes me special and I have something that gives me power. I don't want to fall into the crowd. Like, I want to always be someone that you sort of see and you're like, yeah, I know exactly who that is. I have always been really, really honestly obsessed with things like gender and sexuality. When I first got out of high school, I went on to study and drop out of a sociology course majoring in gender and sexuality. I find it so interesting to look at the way the world is and just analyze it through eyes of different people in different genders, different sexualities, different spectrums, and just see the way the world is. And I think it's really important to do that, especially when, you know, someone who is a straight cis woman going into this space and not abusing their privilege and not coming in and appropriating the culture, but really just genuinely appreciating it for what it is.
How do you not do that?
Well, one thing that I think really sets sort of the way that I see the world is that because I have a Jewish background, I grew up learning about the Holocaust and learning about the things that happened to my family specifically, and going in knowing that people can be hated and killed and ostracized and all these terrible things just for being who they are, I really sort of grew up with this idea of no, that cannot happen. So I sort of use what I have as privilege in this world to have a voice and to say things about it and to show people that they can speak up and they can do something, because if we don't, we're all stuck. Like, you do need to just go out and use what you have, and if what you have is privilege, accept it, acknowledge it and use it.
As gay men, do you think we create a safe space for women in queer spaces?
I think we can do better in terms of making a safer space for queer women, but I think we do make a safe space in general, not always specifically for straight women, and sometimes I find that by trying to do that, we become able to lose our queer spaces because we're trying to be too inclusive.
Some of us try really hard, but not as done by the wider community enough to facilitate safer spaces for women. And I think that's just not anyone's particular fault. I don't want to blame anybody, but that's just how institutionalized patriarchy is living itself out in the gay community. And sometimes the good example is that women always complain about gay men going up and touching their tits. We can't do that, guys. That's just bad.
It depends, of course, on the venue and the exact sort of space, because there's a lot of different spaces in the LGBT community, and some of them are more accepting of women and some of them aren't. Ultimately, I think a lot of people are trying, and there is a lot of positive change that is happening, which is fantastic. but often gay men don't get called out enough when they are misogynistic, and that is what creates issues in terms of safe spaces for women.
When you're representing your brand and when you're representing the person that you've created and your character, you do have to take into account how you react to situations. And so there have been times where people have grabbed me in these queer spaces and I have to stop and take a moment and think, well, how am I going to react to this? Am I going to scream at them? Am I going to make a scene and unfortunately have that play negatively on me? Or am I going to tell them to stop and actually have a conversation with them and explain to them why they can't do that? And maybe change someone's mind as to what consent is, as to why it's not okay, as to, you know, how even though I am a straight woman in their space, they still need to respect me and they still need to treat me as if, you know, whatever, as if I'm someone who they think they need to go respect to. I'm losing my train of thought, but yeah, it's just, I think you need to really look at how you're reacting to those situations and take it from what could be a really big scene and a negative thing that's going to turn back on you into a conversation and a discourse.
It's a really important thing that men need to look at, not just gay men, but men.
Definitely.
But especially within the spaces that we have for our queer community. Mm. I mean, the experience you just talked about, you were talking about the business of when you're in drag, but that's also the experience that women have.
Definitely.
It's not just whether you're in drag or not, and women have that experience. And the fact that you have to stop for a second to negotiate how you're going to respond to what is essentially someone physically invading your space or touching you in a way that's just not acceptable is not okay.
You know, it's lucky that I'm having to think about creating a discourse as my reaction, but in so many other situations, you're genuinely having to think on the spot of, do I say something and risk getting attacked, or do I go along with it and risk getting attacked? Like, what are my options here? So, I mean, in a sense, it's lucky that I am in that place where I can say stop and know that nothing is going to happen sort of negatively in an abusive way and use it as a positive. But yeah, as a woman, you do really have to sort of always weigh up your options when things like that happen, because you're not always in a safe space. There's not enough of this conversation going around. And I think because it's within a community where, you know, men aren't necessarily seeing women as sexual objects, but they're still seeing them as objects in some sense, because we're not really part of their world in that way. So I think through a lot of people's understanding, it's, well, I'm not attracted to you, so therefore I can touch you because it's not a threat. But no, you're still a man, you're still stronger than me, you're still having that ability to dominate me without my consent. And I think that just really needs to be put out there, because, you know, whether they're drunk or not, it's still happening, it's still not okay, and they just need to be able to understand that. I know that the bars that I go to more often, the staff are so incredible and lovely and helpful that if something were to happen, 100% they would be there. But it's mostly been things like, I'll be talking to someone and make a joke about how boobs are my real boobs, and they'll go and grab them. And it's like, that's not really an invitation for you. And even if, you know,
it's not at all an invitation.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been things like that where I can easily, you know, rip someone's hands off me and then start the conversation. It's never been something that's been so terrifying or so intense that I've had to grab someone. But yeah, I do know that people would be there for me if I needed it. But what's interesting is I know that a lot of my male friends who are queens, it happens to them as well. And I think it's this idea that in society, women are objects, be it sexual or just plain objects, so that when a man is dressing up as a woman, it is still an invitation for many people to go and grab them. And I think it's that sort of feminine energy that people take as not necessarily a weakness, but something that they have the right to control.
What is it like when you have to have these conversations with people or have had it a lot of times?
Honestly, I find walking away from the conversation, although the situation may be frustrating, it's sort of, I don't want to say good, but it's a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a almost empowering feeling, because I know that I have done something that was right, and that maybe me going through that in a level that isn't necessarily scary or
intimidating
for me, thank you, that it might prevent it from happening to someone else who is not as confident or who is not in as safe of a space.
What would you say to any men listening, gay, straight, whoever they may be, about what they could do in any space, whether it be queer or not, to make a change for how you interact in regards to that?
Honestly, like, it's a boring cliche answer, but communicate with people. I have so many friends within this community that they know me, I know them, I feel comfortable with them, we've had conversations before, and if they come up to me and, you know, touch me or grab me or slap me or whatever, and I do the same to them, it's not a big deal because we know each other, we've talked about it, we have that consent, and if it's needed, we'll bring it up again, we'll talk again. But if it's someone you don't know, if it's someone that looks shy, if it's someone that looks alone, don't go in and use your hands to communicate. Like, you need to use words with people. You need to be able to create a discussion, and also don't treat women as a second-class part of society. I think there's this whole idea that the majority of women within these queer spaces are what's known as fag hags, and that not a lot of them are even part of the community. And honestly, I think it's safe to say that I'm one of the few straight cis women within this community. I think the majority of women who do go to these events and do go to these spaces and do use these spaces as their own are queer in one form or another. And for that not to be respected as that is their community as well, and that is their right to feel safe as well, it's just not okay.
That was drag performer Menora Fox shining some light from a different perspective on how gay men treat women in queer spaces.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Dina Curie.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.